Listen to these words from President Trump, especially how he described his political opponents on the 4th of July.
We are now in the process of defeating the radical left, the Marxists, the anarchists, the agitators, the looters, and people who, in many instances, have absolutely no clue what they are doing.
The radical left, the Marxists, the anarchists. Well, our next guest says those hyperbolic descriptions come straight out of the playbook of former House Speaker Newt Gingrich. Princeton historian and Here and Now contributor Julian Zelizer writes about Gingrich in a new book out today called Burning Down the House, Newt Gingrich, the Fall of a Speaker, and the Rise of the New Republican Party. Julian, welcome back. And let's start with the rise of Gingrich himself. He was first elected to Congress from Georgia back in 1978. Who was he?
He was a pretty unknown Republican. He had gone to Emory as an undergraduate. Before that, he had been an Army brat, spent much of his life living in different parts of Europe until finally settling in Georgia. He'd also had a PhD in history from Tulane and taught for a little while at West Georgia College. But when he comes in 1978, he's one of the new generation of Republicans, and he was very committed to being part of a Republican Party that would finally have power in Congress after Democrats had controlled the House and Senate since 1954.
And he saw that one way to get there was to go after the corruption that he saw from the Democrats who controlled Congress.
That's right. Gingrich really understood that. He was coming to Washington in the shadow of Vietnam and Watergate. There was a lot of distrust of government. And rather than focusing all the time on right versus left, conservative versus liberal, he went after the Democrats. He called them a corrupt Democratic establishment that maintained its power unfairly, unconstitutionally. He used all the language that he could imagine for his partisan arsenal. And that's how he focused on bringing down the Democrats, making this a choice between, did you want the establishment to survive or did you want a new kind of politics to emerge?
And the Democrats didn't see that coming after Watergate?
They didn't totally see it coming. Democrats had passed many reforms during the 1970s to make Washington a better place. They had instituted ethics reforms, for example, that tried to hold leaders more accountable. They had changed campaign finance laws, and a new generation of Democrats had entered, and they thought that would be sufficient. And they didn't really see how far Gingrich was willing to go, not only in this line of argument, but in the way he attacked them. They thought politics, many of them, like Jim Wright, thought politics was still going to be played by the old rules, and they didn't understand that Gingrich had a whole other kind of political game in mind.
Well, and talk about the language that was involved with that game that he had in mind, how he used words to make his point and make it stick with the American people.
Yeah, Gingrich was a politician who thought a lot about how you frame an issue, and he thought a lot about confrontation and saying things that were explosive, because he believed that the more confrontational, the more outlandish you were, the more the media would cover you, and the more the media would replicate what you said about your opponent, whether it was true or not true. So throughout his career, Gingrich said the worst things about Democrats. In 1984, he would go on C-SPAN all the time, speaking from the floor of the House, basically accusing Democrats of being unpatriotic and not supporting Ronald Reagan's efforts to fight communism. When he goes after Speaker Jim Wright in 1989, he essentially criminalizes the speaker, arguing he's trying to fill his pockets at the expense of taxpayers. And he even distributes this memo through GOPAC. It's a Republican organization in 1990 to teach Republicans how to speak like Newt. And he tells them, use words like corruption, traitor, sick, radical, as a way to describe your opponent. So language was essential to him, in large part because the right language would get you the attention that he needed.
Well, and speaking of attention, of course, the media was essential to him as well. He was rising just as cable TV was in its infancy. You mentioned C-SPAN. Here he was in January 1986 on the House floor talking about the federal deficit, carried live by C-SPAN.
We can do the job. We can pass the bills. We can work it out with the president so that before October 1, we have put in place the kind of sound, defensible, realistic program that, in fact, the country deserves, that the Congress owes them. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Now, that speech was delivered to an empty House chamber, but you can't see that on C-SPAN because, as Gingrich knew, they only had the camera on the person who was speaking, but he knew that people were watching, and he turned it into a battleground. Here's a moment that features then-House Speaker Tip O'Neill, the Democrat, in May of 1984.
My personal opinion is this. You deliberately stood on that well before an emptied house and challenged these people, and you challenged their Americanism. And it's the lowest thing that I've ever seen in my 32 years in Congress.
Mr. Speaker, if I may reclaim my time, let me say, first of all,
I move we take the Speaker's words down.
That was a stunning rebuke for Tip O'Neill, and it was just what Gingrich wanted. He wanted to goad Democrats into responding to his attacks.
That's exactly right. That was called Cam Scam. This was one of his first big moments in Washington, and he and a group of Republicans had gone on every night and made these blistering speeches about specific Democrats, and viewers didn't know the chamber was empty. So when Democrats didn't respond to the charges, it looked like they were guilty. And then when Speaker Tip O'Neill turns the cameras on the chamber and shows it's empty, and when he makes that speech about Gingrich, Gingrich doesn't stop. He says, look, this is my point. They're corrupt. And then the kind of icing on the cake was that all of the national news networks covered this story. And for the first time, because of the confrontation, Gingrich was on national television, and he really arrived as a figure. So he understood how to play the whole news cycle in that story of Cam Scam incredibly well.
And he brought down a speaker, as you write in this book, and you mentioned Jim Wright. So let's talk about him. How did Gingrich take him down and why?
Jim Wright succeeds Tip O'Neill as speaker in 1987. He's an old school Texas Democrat, believed in the social safety net. He was not a dove, but he also believed in restraint overseas, especially after Vietnam. Gingrich picks up on stories that had emerged in the national and Texas press about Wright, and there were lots of different stories, too, he really hones in on. One, Wright sold these books that he published in bulk to groups before he spoke to them, which was not an ethical violation. It didn't break the law, but it didn't look so good. And two, there were these stories that Wright had been in business with a real estate developer back in his district. Again, not unethical, not illegal. But Gingrich took these stories and he blows them up. He says, this is proof that Wright is the most corrupt speaker in American history. And he whips Washington up into a frenzy. And Wright is caught off guard. He thinks, he calls Gingrich a gadfly, says you just have to swat him away. But Wright is wrong. The Ethics Committee launches an investigation, and before they're finished, Wright is under pressure to resign from his position, which he does. And it's because of this that Republicans decide to elect Gingrich, who was seen as this bomb thrower who you stayed away from, into a leadership position, to becoming House Minority Whip, which was his path to becoming Speaker.
Well, and here's a little bit of Wright's resignation speech on May 31st, 1989.
All of us in both political parties must resolve to bring this period of mindless cannibalism to an end. There's been enough of it.
Julian, how much of the politics that we see today, and I think people would be forgiven for calling some of it mindless cannibalism, is directly drawn from what Newt Gingrich did back in the 80s?
I think a lot of it. I think the prioritization of partisanship over governance, which was a big decision within the Republican Party when Gingrich becomes the leader, it lasts through this day. And Jim Wright thought by sacrificing himself, by making that speech and issuing that warning, that it would stop. Gingrich had no intention of stopping. And more importantly, the Republicans embraced his tactics. And you've seen several generations of Republicans, the Tea Party generation that comes to Washington in 2010, and now Donald Trump in the presidency, that have gone according to the Gingrich playbook. So I really think you see the origins of this, not just partisan era, but fierce institution-destroying partisanship that I think the Republicans embraced more than the Democrats. It started in the 1980s and stays with us right through this day.
That's Julian Zelizer, whose new book is Burning Down the House, Newt Gingrich, The Fall of a Speaker and the Rise of the New Republican Party. You can read an excerpt at hereandnow.org. Julian, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.